From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today, we are privileged to have joining us the President of NAPS, Brian Wagner, our Executive Vice President, Ivan Butts, and our Secretary Treasurer, Chuck Mulladore. What we are going to talk about today is something that has been requested by virtue of the interest in last week's podcast, and that is we're going to be talking about the recently filed lawsuit by NAPS against the United States Postal Service. In addition, what I'd like to start talking about, however, is something that happened last Friday, and that is a Board of Governors meeting. In fact, it was the Temporary Emergency Committee of the Board of Governors, because they're still missing a working quorum. What came out of that meeting was that the chairman of the board, that's Robert Duncan, announced that the 10-year plan that we've eagerly awaited will wait a little bit longer, and it will await the seating of the three new Senate-confirmed Board of Governors, that is, until they're actually seated on the board. And the chairman wants to give the new Board of Governors an opportunity to review the 10-year plan and then to provide them with the opportunity for input in that plan. So we're going to be waiting a bit for that 10-year plan. Secondly, what was covered at that Board of Governors meeting that was of interest is that the Postal Service, although it improved its performance from the second to the third quarter, it still failed to meet the targets. Its own targets for its performance on a series of metrics and a series of including overnight delivery, two-day delivery, and so forth. And the third issue that was covered at the Board of Governors was the financial situation of the United States Postal Service. And I want to caution our folks that are listening that the financials are not as bad as you would think they are. The reason being is that we're still awaiting a Postal Regulatory Commission implementation of its recommendations to raise revenue, and that is to provide the Postal Service considerable more flexibility in setting its rates. Additionally, a partial restoration of the exigent rate increase, which sunset a number of years ago, and a number of other opportunities for the PRC to provide for revenue enhancement on the part of the Postal Service. Additionally, the expenses include considerable amount of money from interest rate changes, which is of no fault to the Postal Service, as well as amortization payments for pre-funding. Now, Brian, one of the issues that we spoke about last week with regard to the court case was the scope of the case. And we addressed last week the compensatory issues for which we're suing the Postal Service. But you wanted to expand that conversation a bit.
Right, Bob. One of the things we discussed last time at the podcast was the fact-finding panel's report on the pay and how NAPS filed the lawsuit regarding the pay. But this lawsuit also has two other aspects that we're looking at. One is that NAPS represents all EAS at headquarters and area offices. And two, that NAPS also represents postmasters because we have met the Title 39 criteria of 20% of our members are postmasters. So besides the pay issue, it's also representation of all EAS headquarters, area, and postmasters.
So we're suing the Postal Service for failure to recognize NAPS as one of the organizations who could represent all EAS-level employees. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. If you look at Title 39 with respect to the postal side of it, we show that Title 39 does not differentiate between field, headquarters, and area employees. It just says all supervisory and other managerial personnel. So we believe that within the Title 39 aspects of 10004 and 10003, we have the rights to represent all EAS. And again, with regard to the meeting the criteria of the 20% of postmasters as NAPS members, Title 39 gives us that right to represent postmasters.
If NAPS represented all EAS-level employees, how would that change how the organization operates or our representation of the group, the different groups out there?
Well, right now, NAPS can represent all EAS with regard to disciplinary action, things like that. But when it comes time for the postmasters, we would be able to represent them in pay and benefits also. We still believe that we should be able to represent all headquarters and area employees on pay and benefits, but the post office hasn't recognized us for that and has not consulted on the pay and benefits of area and headquarters employees.
Now, Ivan, one of the issues that we've been talking about a lot has been whether or not Congress has a role to play as we look forward, because as we've spoken about in the past, the lawsuit affects what has happened up until this point in time. Looking forward, what efforts do you suspect we're going to be pursuing to sort of make sure that this type of lawsuit doesn't happen again?
Well, Bob, thank you for that question. And we talked about this in earlier podcasts also. Some of the legislative efforts that we have undertaken since we've got the fact-finding decision. And just one quick point, our position on the representation of postmasters is based off of 20% of postmasters are NAPS members, not our overall membership, but 20% of all postmasters are NAPS members, actually over, well over 20%, as Brian has stated. So that represents that portion of it. But as far as the legislation goes moving forward and what we're trying to do legislatively in response to the fact-finding report, which was very concise in on what needs to happen and how the post office needs to engage us, is that we've been active. We've been meeting with our champions up on the Hill, Elijah Cummings, Representative Cummings, Representative Connolly, Representative Lynch, Representative Lawrence. We've met with their staff on a couple occasions, and so we want to look at the things we've heard it said over time at conventions and various other venues of, you know, Title 39 doesn't have teeth, and so our job now is to determine what that means, and then how do we make it Title 39 have teeth? What are some of the components that could make that up? And then start looking to champion that up on the Hill with our champions and with the support of our advocates out in the field. And one of the things we want to look at is when do we start our negotiations on pay? You know, we feel that the model that currently is 45 days after the largest union has ratified their contract is archaic and out of date and is no longer relevant to our negotiations. We feel that we really, before our pay ends, we really need to be talking about our pay package 6 months prior to its expiration. And then, you know, hopefully come to a resolve prior to the end of our pay agreement. And so we won't have to wait this year and a half, 2 years, before we get a pay package that's expired and get the responses that what has happened is water under the bridge and the things like that. So that's one of the aspects I think that we're looking at and we want to try to force change or provoke change. One of the things Representative Connolly was strong about was that this 40-year-old law of Title 39 does need to be reviewed. So we're going to play an active role in reviewing that. You know, I think we would like to see something different with the mediation process, the fact-finding process, the very fact-finding process that we use. I think, you know, it would be better served in the negotiations leading up in pay talks and all the way through the process if at the end of that process, if that fact-finding process has to be enacted, that the recommendations are binding, that is something the Postal Service has to kind of implement. I think, again, that would better serve the entire process in ensuring that we have fair negotiations through this process and then fair results at the end of the process. So, you know, there's a thing, there are a few things we're going to have to champion. There are a few things we're going to be looking to talk about more at LTS 2020 when we hit the Hill. There's going to be a lot more chatter when we reach out to you guys to go out and represent us in your home district. So the legislative effort will continue on and will continue to grow. And again, as always, I thank you guys for your support legislatively, and we'll move this thing forward.
Great. Chuck, now, I know all of you gentlemen have been traveling the country and speaking with our different our different branches in the different states. Now, Chuck, what type of frustration do you sense out there from our members about what's going on with regard to consultations?
Well, Bob, first of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. Pleasure to be here for
this is your first time. My God, we had the initiation right beforehand.
Yeah, it's great. How does it be in the secret room where the podcast happens? The frustration I hear from members, which is what I've been hearing for years now, but it's kind of peaked over the last couple of years as we head into pay talks with the Postal Service, is just an overall sense that pay for performance just doesn't meet their needs, nor does it meet the needs of the Postal Service, in our opinion. In our view, pay for performance provides neither pay nor performance. Service has not been what it should be. A well-motivated workforce has not been there. EAS pay has been lagging, and we heard all that in the fact-finding, and it's all in the fact-finding report. So I think the frustration that has been growing for years now kind of encapsulated itself in the fact-finding report, and ultimately with it's in the body of the lawsuit that we filed against the Postal Service.
Now, let me ask you this question. We've been fighting and pursuing changes to the Merit System Protection Board process, providing, let's say, headquarters personnel and those EAS-level employees who are currently denied appeal rights. Does our efforts in the area of legislative changes to the consultation process, does it bear any relationship to the MSPB process?
Well, Bob, what I think we're trying to do here is, one, we're Title 39. When we talk Title 39, we're not trying to change all of Title 39, only those aspects that relate to the Postal Service and the relationship NAPS has with the post office. But when you're looking at Title 39, we're also looking at the Merit System Protection Board, making sure all of our members not only are represented from field, headquarters, and postmasters, but they all have the right to have MSPB rights, Merit System Protection Board rights. So we have approximately, I'd say, 7,500 to 7,600 EAS out there who don't have those rights. And I think that really ties into what we're trying to do is have the post office not divide EAS, per se, by having, hey, your field, your area, your headquarters, and only a portion of you can have MSPB rights. We're all EAS. NAPS is told we're on the leadership team. We're part of the team. But why are you dividing this team? Why are you separating out different aspects when we're all under the post office?
One of the interesting historical bases is for what we have in Title 39 right now, particularly in Section 1004, is the historic belief that frontline managers actually participate and actually have a managerial function, a leadership function within the Postal Service in crafting policy. That seems to have changed, and that, if I might muse, could be driving a lot of the issues that are happening today. Not necessarily compensatory issue, but policymaking issues and how plans run and how post offices run. Does that have a relationship to the failure of the Postal Service to consult in good faith with NAPS? Ivan?
I think it does have some input into it, obviously. One thing that we looking at the fathers of Title 39, the law that created, they said that this participation that we're supposed to have in the formatting of policies and procedures that impact EAS is supposed to be something of value, something of depth, something that we're kind of part of that team that they say we are in the development of these policies and programs that impact our pay benefits and fringe benefits. I think over time, I don't know if deteriorated is the best word, but it's the word I'll use right now, to merely receiving memos. And I think one of the things this leadership team has decided that we're going to do is that we're going to try to make sure that the agency acts in accordance more with the letter of the law to provide us with the opportunity to participate in the development of these programs that impact the pay of EAS, rather than just receive memorandums from headquarters that this is what they're going to do.
Now, when we talk about the letter of the law, Brian, we're talking about comparability and recruitment and retention. One of the key aspects of the lawsuit is that the current compensation system does not incentivize craft employees to look for promotions into the managerial level because, to be quite honest, a lot of them can make more money being a letter carrier, postal worker, APW member, or a clerk.
That's what we're seeing, Bob. And one of the things we talked about in the last podcast was that you're not seeing the craft employees with 10, 15, 20 years experience wanting to step up in a supervisory or managerial position. You have a lot of non-career CCAs, PSEs, you know, applying for these jobs and then with very little experience. And I think when you look at it, our lawsuit against the Postal Service is because the Postal Service failure to abide by Title 39, the law. And that was, again, provide a pay package that is comparable to the private sector, provides reasonable pay differential, definitely attracts and retains. And it was shown, and I mentioned it at the last podcast, where those non-career employees coming into managerial supervisory positions has shown that a third are leaving after a few years. The retention is not there. And then those, what I call senior craft employees, career employees, they see what the supervisors go through, the managers go through, the pay isn't there. They're not getting, as a EAS, you're not getting cost of living. We're not getting locality pay. The overtime was given up years ago for those when we had overtime. And the promotional pay increases, there has been some minor adjustments, but still we were able to get the minimum and maximum adjusted a bit. But there's still that sense of if I move up in the post office, the pay, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, as I've said before. The money, the pay increase isn't worth the responsibility I've been given. And we've talked about it. The jobs that a supervisor or managers do is a big business. You're talking millions of dollars in their budgets, managing hundreds of employees on a daily basis.
Yeah, but even if you're managing one of the stations or branches, there's a considerable amount of revenue that could pass through those branches or stations, as well as employees that work there, depending on the size of the station or branch, no?
Correct. And the biggest thing is you're, as a supervisor manager, you're managing this operation, this business, and the post office has a tendency not to pay these people for the work they're doing. And we talked about the pay for performance. Chuck made a good point. It's not pay and it's not performance. It's not generating what we call a well-motivated workforce to say, hey, look, if I work harder, I'm going to get compensated properly. It's going to be, the juice is going to be worth that squeeze. I'm going to get paid for the work I'm doing.
Yeah, Chuck, do you have anything to add to that? Particularly, do you notice, as you say, as you travel, regional differences, or is it nationwide that the frustration that we have, that postal supervisors have with regard to the pay system and the way in which they are constructive or not constructively engaged in the development of policies of where they work?
I think the most interesting part of when I travel and when we attend regional conferences or even national conferences, people have a lot of the same issues and the same frustrations. So it's not just centered in a particular place among a particular group of people. The issues are pretty much consistent all across the board. And whatever position you have, whatever title you hold in the Postal Service as a manager, there was a time when I first started, and I've been around 31 years now, that if you wanted to get promoted as a supervisor, there was 10 or 15 other people that apply for the same job, or a manager, or a postmaster. Now you've got groups where there's only two or three people applying for those jobs, and we've got people that are on details that have been in the post office for 6 months, because there just isn't the desire there for people to want to move forward, sacrifice a little bit for a greater good. There just isn't that there anymore. And I think that's the frustration that we hear all over the country among all the groups we speak with. So it defines it to me as a systematic problem that needs to be addressed. The Postal Service apparently isn't willing to address it. So on behalf of our membership and all EAS, really, we felt it necessary for us to address it.
Interestingly enough, despite the frustration and the problems that are confronting managerial-level employees, the Postal Service still is the most approved of federal agency in the country with a very high approval rate. How do you sort of reconcile? You have a dispirited managerial group, and still we're able to perform exceedingly well for our customers.
Well, for me, I think that what that means is that sometimes we deliver the mail and we deliver the results in spite of the Postal Service. And I've said it many times at the workroom floor level, in spite of all the telecons and the phone calls and the commitments and the spreadsheets that somebody seems to want somewhere along the road, every day we get that mail moved and delivered because the EAS go over and above what they are required to do to make sure the mail gets delivered to our customers. So in spite of all of the things that we face as EAS, we still get the mail delivered for the customers. And I think it's a credit to everyone who's out there moving the mail.
Thanks.
I think that was very well said. I mean, when you're looking at it, the Postal Pulse results are still showing that a large, very large percentage of the EAS are not engaged. They're very disengaged. And the fact that it's every piece every day. Our members bleed postal blue when it comes to getting the job done. Again, like Chuck said, despite the challenges they face, they know serving that postal customer is key in getting the mail delivered. You know, collecting it, processing it, and delivering it, getting the job done. And they do a great job every day.
Ivan?
Yeah, I just want to echo what's already been said by Chuck and Bryant. You know, and again, last week, I think my last podcast, I talked about thanking you guys for the work that you do out there. And that's what, you know, we're expressing now. We really appreciate the work and the commitment of our EAS to continue to run the day-to-day operations of this agency, despite all the challenges that we're facing with pay, with engagement, with the senior executives of this agency. And I'll just say for our group here, we're 100% committed to seeing the initiatives that we have started and those initiatives we might take on, seeing them through to the end, fighting for our membership. And we appreciate all the efforts that you do and to continue to moving America's mail. We need that, and we appreciate that.
That's a heavy burden that I think that each and every one of you carries in pursuing the best interests of EAS level employees. And I am absolutely confident that every member of NAPS and every EAS employee really does appreciate that. With that, let's wrap this up if I can. Now, Brian, I do have to ask you this question. People are, unfortunately, last week we forgot to cover this. What is the ice cream flavor of the day?
Well, Bob, that's a good question, and, you know, I thought about it. You know, our lawsuit deals with really three things: the pay of our members, the representation that we represent all EAS at area and headquarters, and also that we represent postmasters. So when you look at three flavors to combine, the best one is chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla. Neapolitan would be fitting for this podcast.
With cherries in or no cherries?
Always in. Cherries, a little bit of whipped cream, never hurts.
Chocolate sauce?
Well, sure, let's throw that in too. It all helps. Chuck likes the chocolate sauce, caramel. Hey, we're here to make sure we sweeten up the pot.
Okay, well, that's about, as I said, that's all the time we have for today. I want to wish everyone a really happy summer. We're going to be going dark for the next 2 weeks, and we will return to the air during the first week of September. Take care and enjoy.
I'm going to bend right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going